Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I am Kenneth Amendori, and I'm joined today with Craig Hamke of TFMetalsReport.com, returning guest and someone who spends a lot of time looking at the precious metals sector, looking at the economy, looking at how what's going on in society is going to implicate, you know, the money system. And I think that's what we're going to talk about today. It's a crazy world. We've been discussing that here in the pre-interview. He's also the weekly host of the Sprott Money News Weekly Wrap-Up with Eric Sprott. It's a must listen to, so definitely check that out. Craig, thanks for coming on Crush the Street with me today.
Hey, thank you, Kenneth. It's nice to get caught up. We have no shortage of stuff to talk about.
the most consequential election of our lifetime. Haven't we heard that time and time again? But it does feel like we are at a boiling point here. So many things are surfacing: riots, political discord, socialism on the rise, what's going on in precious metals, and even, you know, what's going on in the stock market and real estate. Everything has become a speculative investment. So having said that, you know, what are your thoughts? I mean, like, as just to start this off here and get caught up a little bit, what are some of your thoughts on where we are right now in 2020?
Well, and I guess on the first part of your question, I remember reading the book, The Fourth Turning, 7-8 years ago. I got a guy I got to know by the name of Jim Quinn, who runs a website called The Burning Platform, and he turned me onto it. And I started paging through it, and I thought, okay. There's a lot of stuff that pertains to the current time now that's playing out, and it's like, oh boy. The Fourth Turning implies that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. It's just that, we got a lot of tunnel left before we get through it, unfortunately. And, you know, and I would also encourage people to, you know, I feel like I gained at least a little bit of understanding about the disjointed nature of society, where we're all just like this and everybody seems to hate each other based on politics or race or anything else. And there's a show on Netflix called The Social Dilemma, which doesn't necessarily answer everything. It's like a documentary where they interview, I don't know, Kenneth, have you seen it?
I haven't, but I know what you're talking about.
All right, well, check it out. They interview about 8 or 10 people through the course of the show, kind of, you know, running, you know, people pop up. And they're all these software engineers and folks and designers that came up with sites like Facebook and Pinterest and Twitter and stuff like that. And they talk about how social media was begun with really good, you know, aims. They really thought this was neat stuff, but it has evolved in such a way now in the last 10 or 11 years to where it's really a detriment to society. In particularly from a political standpoint, because a lot of these sites are designed to keep you on the site, you know, for as long as possible, whether it's YouTube or Twitter or Pinterest, you know, or any of these sites, Facebook, you know, you name it. And one of the ways that they keep you on the site is they know what your interests are. And so they just keep feeding you stuff that they think will interest you. Well, if you're interested in politics at all, they'll feed you just the political side that you want to see. And that leads to, you know, people thinking that, wait a second, my entire news stream is pro-Democrat or pro-Republican. You know, everybody else on the other side must be crazy, aren't they? Don't they understand what the news is? And it really puts us all at loggerheads. And I think that's a big part of where we are in the world today. And again, I don't see that getting any better anytime soon. So I'd encourage everybody to watch that, because I just thought that was insightful. It's about 90 minutes.
I definitely will.
Where this all leads for the precious metals is the same place that it's been heading. And I think if I can add any value today, it's in more on focusing on the big picture. You know, you mentioned everything being speculative. Maybe that's another word for volatile, you know, that... Because a lot of times stable investments that aren't volatile, you know, like a CD or, you know, what government bonds used to be, are not considered speculative, right? Mm-hmm. It's the things that are just, you know, back and forth, wild swings in value and price that people think, you know, that's volatile. So that must be speculative and risky. Well, everything's volatile now, you know? And so therefore everything's speculative and risky. And I guess to a great extent, that's true. But what's driving it and continues to drive it is the central bank policies of the last 4 or 5 decades, And they've painted us into a corner now where the accumulated debt is so massive that the money creation that is needed to just simply service that debt is growing exponentially. Because, you know, by servicing the debt, you're kind of paying down the debt, the money supply some. And so you've got this massive nut that you've got to cover servicing the global amount of debt. But part of that is kind of deflationary, you know, as you're paying it down. And so you've just got to make more and more and more. And eventually that chart of the money supply just, I'm doing it backwards, goes like this. And the demand for more central bank loosening and quantitative easing and cash creation, everything just goes through the roof. And so, and Powell has told you this. Powell has assured everybody they're not going to be raising rates for at least 3 years. Doesn't matter what inflation is. And then he's basically begging the U.S. Congress to pass some stimulus bill spending money so that they can monetize it and put more cash out there. And so, yeah, you know, you get these swings, these volatile swings, and you get these periods of consolidation, which are inevitable after every price run-up. But the main thing is to focus on the big picture. None of this stuff, like I've been telling you, is changing or will change. And so you just got to recognize these trends and stay invested.
Yeah, I appreciate your ability to critically think. And I think that's what it comes down to when you speak to somebody who understands the economy, understands what is likely to happen, where people's incentives are, and when that's misaligned, what is likely to happen. And so it's just, you know, for me, it's such a frustrating thing, you know, going back to, you know, this censorship, this control, this manipulation that's going on, you know, these social media platforms, which you discussed here. And again, our condolences for some of the friends that we've seen that have been shut down. My goodness. What as this pertains to, you know, the coverage that you've done on precious metals through the years, this manipulation, having looked at that for so long, does it trigger any thoughts, you know, seeing how they're now manipulating the media to the next level?
Yeah, it's really Orwellian, isn't it? Yeah. And you see it across the entire spectrum of media, whether it's financial media, political media. Yeah, I mean, look at all the things you've seen on the internet of, you know, a couple of big conglomerates on all these TV stations, and they show the same exact bit of reporting spoken by their talking head news anchors, right? Mm-hmm. In almost every single market. And it's the exact same story with the exact same script. And you're like, what is going on here? You know, and then anybody that offers a different version of events is immediately put down as a conspiracy theorist. Mm-hmm. And I think Orwellian is really the only way you can look at it, to where, you know, you can either seek your own truth, find the actual truth, seek it out, or you can just swallow the narrative. And, you know, frankly, for a lot of people, swallowing the narrative is the easiest thing to do, because, you know, life's hard. Go ahead.
Swallowing the narrative. I mean, that's so true. And I guess I was more optimistic that as things surface, people will understand and they'll draw respectable common sense conclusions with critical thinking, but that's not what's happening. We're seeing some mainstream things, and not to get pick sides and get too into, you know, right and left politics, seeing what happened with these Hunter Biden emails come out and the New York Post sharing this story, and then this being blatantly censored. I mean, that was clear. This happened on a level that everyone front and center could see. Yeah. And I just wonder about what hope do we have when things like that are so clear don't come to fruition? Nothing happens. It just gets swept under the rug, like the Hillary Clinton emails. Like, nothing happened of that. She's doing a podcast now.
Yeah. The agenda of those in power is clear, right? And you can see it. And of course, they're number one. If you're in power, your number one goal is to keep your power, right? Whether you're a politician or a banker, I call it the financial political complex, as they kind of work together. They're always going to, your first goal is to not give up your power. And so if you can then get the media to cooperate with you in that regard, yeah, it makes it hard to overcome. You know, I don't know, you know, Ken, the other part of this though too, you know, you want to search for truth and you want to have the ability to find it. But I also do get concerned though, because there's a lot of people that think they know the truth because they saw some fancy video on YouTube or something. You know, I get that all the time. Oh, Craig, you got to watch this. Look at this, you know, some slick video makes it sound like this person's really got it. You know, they've figured it all out when it's all BS too, you know? And so it does take, you know, a level of discernment to figure out, you know, what is actually the truth. But again, what's the problem with where we are at this point is that you're not being allowed now to employ that discernment. They just want to feed you the narrative that they want you to see. And that obviously is, you know, that's troublesome. That's not good for society.
Let's talk about what we've seen this year with gold and silver. Kind of what's notable? We'll start there. What's been notable for you this year? The last time we spoke, by the way, I mean, we were kind of, you know, it was more frustrating. It's like, yeah, you know, it's still 1200. It's still 1300. I mean, it's not doing a lot. Here we are, you know, it's 1900 since our last call. I mean, we've moved up a lot. So we'll have to point that out. But, you know, what are your thoughts in general here? And I have some follow-up questions as it pertains to manipulation.
Well, again, this is that big picture stuff, right? Everybody wants, especially because of the manipulation, everybody wants nothing but upticks, you know, and they want the banks to die a painful death because of all the pain they've inflicted over the decades in manipulating price. And so when you're rallying like crazy, like we were through July and into early August, everybody wants that to just keep going nonstop every day. And it doesn't work that way. Even in non-manipulated markets, it doesn't work that way. You know, you kind of run out of buyers for a while and then all of a sudden momentum slows and then people start taking profits and you kind of, basically it's a consolidation phase. And then from there, you get an ignition again, you start moving up if the trend hasn't changed, if the fundamental things driving it haven't changed. And that's the big picture. That's what I keep trying to remind everybody at TF Metals Report. This whole charade that the Fed tried to force upon everybody from 13 to 18 came to a crashing halt, came crashing down about this time 2 years ago. They had told everybody, everything that happened in the financial crisis was just a one-off. They're going to normalize interest rates and normalize their balance sheet. Like, interest rates are going to go to 5% and their balance sheet was going to go back to a trillion. But that's what they told everybody. And over a five-year period, they contracted the money supply. They sold off about $700 billion of their balance sheet. And if finally they stretched the rubber band as far as it would go and it would snap. And then it finally snapped, about this time in 2018. And we started getting all this liquidity crisis and a 10-year note got to 3.25% and the stock market began to crash. And that was when they turned course and interest rates, nominal interest rates began to fall. We entered 2019. And at that point, seeing all this happen, I wrote a forecast that I called 2010 plus nine for the year saying, okay, now that they're changing course, 2019 is going to be a lot like 2010. And it was, we hadn't been above 1350 for 6 years. And yet, coming up on 2 years ago, I wrote a forecast saying, now this is going to be the year we break out and we go to 1520. And that's almost exactly where we went. And so it, not knowing COVID was coming, obviously, but I figured, well, none of that has changed. We're on this course now. So I thought we'd rally to at least 1800 this year. And we have. And now that's obviously that trend's going to continue next year because COVID's made it even worse, harder for the bankers in terms of managing the debt. So what does this all mean, Ken? Well, this year has played out a lot like last year in that, like I said, I had that goal of 1500 plus. We sped to that. We got there in early September of last year, but then you get that consolidation phase. And from early September until about the middle of December, we went sideways and people were talking about reversing back down and gold going back to 1200, all this stuff. And I was like, that's crazy. That's not going to happen. And we rallied then into the end of the year, set the stage for this year. Well, this year, my goals were met by early August. I mean, in fact, we went way past it. We got all the, to 2080. And now we're consolidating those gains for about 90 days and going sideways. We'll get this election behind us. We'll start. We have two more Fed meetings to go. We'll rally into the end of this year and then move higher again next year. Again, because fundamentally, the picture hasn't changed. I mean, we did a, what, $3.2 trillion deficit. I still can't believe I even say that with a straight face. $3.2 trillion U.S. budget deficit in the fiscal year that ended September 30th. We're going to do at least that during this current fiscal year. And the Fed is going to monetize it all. And so the situation that has been driving price for 2 years will continue. And so again, that's the key. You don't want to be, I'm sorry if I'm going to go off on a rant here, but Kenneth, so many people, whether it's traditional media like CNBC or Bloomberg, or I don't know, subscription newsletters or technical trading sites and stuff, they kind of all play off this desire for immediate gratification now that we get really from social media, even, right? I mean, you just want things to happen right now, okay? And so most investment advice these days all kind of plays off of that. We got to do it right now. Oh, okay, we're in a downtrend. Okay, we got to get short. And we're going to look for a pullback to a certain level. Then you're going to get back in. And you might occasionally be right. You might bat 500 doing something like that. But you're more apt to be caught wrong-footed when suddenly the trend reemerges. You're out because you dumped all your miners because, you know, you thought we were, you know, the GDX was going to 35 or something. And then all of a sudden, when the new trend, you know, the resumes the upside, you end up chasing. So a lot of the success that people are having on my site, you know, and just being, is just mainly being invested, understanding what the fundamentals are at this point. And you know, what do the Bitcoin people say? Hold on for dear life. Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Craig, yeah, you said so much there and so in a good way. That didn't come off right, huh?
No, but I know what you're saying.
Too like, long.
Dude, Kenneth, I do a podcast every day on my site where I just plug the mic in and I talk for about 20 minutes. So I've been conditioned to just talk nonstop. I apologize.
No, I love it. So having said that, you know, maybe tying in what we've seen. I don't want to minimize what's going on with the manipulation in precious metals, but I'm just looking at what's happening with the censorship and how the realities that this is happening, you know, when we, like, again, going back to the Hunter Biden emails things or the Hillary Clinton emails or just, you know, news that they don't want to care about. Do you expect that to happen on an ongoing basis with precious metals, or do we get to a point where this starts to surface in a meaningful way for investors?
Yes. Is that the right answer?
That's that long game that I think people need to understand.
Right. Look, first of all, because of the most recent JP Morgan, you know, $1 billion fine, the Deutsche Bank traders, the Scotiabank traders, you know, and all of this stuff, there's this notion being floated out of there that somehow now the banks are out of the manipulation business. And you know, I suppose some of them are. Scotiabank selling off their precious metals division, stuff like that. But there's too much money to be made. I mean, they're not out of it. I mean, look, I've been doing this for over a decade now, okay? I'll tell you when I think they're out of it. But just last week, the price of gold ran up to the 50-day moving average, which was effectively smashed 5 weeks ago. And price fell $100 in 3 days because once it broke the 50-day, a whole bunch of technical selling came in and speculators were flushed out and price got crushed. So getting back above it would be a real positive sign. And on a day when the dollar was falling and the bond market was rallying last, whatever it was, Wednesday, gold went up to the 50-day, 1932, and was, I mean, you could see it on the chart. Running like 2 minute candlesticks. You could see every time it tapped 1932, immediately there was massive selling to push it back down. Okay. The next day, we could see the total open interest of COMEX gold contracts rose by 10,000 that day. So, what's happening? The banks are just applying a whole bunch of brand new, fresh shorts, dumping them on the market, soaking up any speculator buy demand that would have, you know, in a static environment, pushed price through that 50 day. Set off a technical buy signal. And then Ken, what, a day later, price is $30 lower. Those 10,000 new contracts that the banks put on short, $30 higher. Let's see. That's 10,000 contracts on $30. That's what, $30 million in a day? That's why they do it. I mean, I don't know. You know, the central banks probably want a higher gold price at this point. But if banks like JP Morgan and HSBC can sit there and continue to manipulate the market with a free hand and make $30 million in a day doing it, they're going to keep doing it. So first and foremost, let's not think that it's over because of these fines and stuff. Back to the premise of your question, though. What I just saw a thing from Russ and Pam Martins last week, Wall Street on Parade, where they added up all of JP Morgan's fines just in the past decade. Just in the past decade, $34 billion in fines that JP Morgan has paid. How is this not considered a criminal organization, right? You and I can see that. How is this not an expose on CNBC or CNN or 60 Minutes or anything like that? Instead, you get these glowing reviews of how brilliant and what a great guy Jamie Dimon is. So everybody's kind of got their own selfish reasons for promoting these narratives and the bias and the what do we want to call it? You know, whether it's censorship or not, but there's a narrative that's put out there, and there are stories that are covered and there are stories that are not covered in the promotion of that narrative and in maintaining power. And I think at the end of the day, that's what it all gets back to.
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting.
That's how pleasant.
Yeah, I mean, $34 billion. You think about it, and you put it in that perspective.
$34 billion.
They're paying $34 billion, and still doing what they're doing.
And I mean, just the last like 10 years, and
funneling money to the government. You know, and why would the government? Think
of it that way. It's like corporate welfare. You know, the $920 million that they paid to the Department of Justice and the CFTC. You and I don't get any of that. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, well, I wonder what the conversation is like, you know, they show up. Hey, how you doing? Back again. You know,
yeah. Hey, well, here, just cut us a check and make sure you hit part of it gets siphoned off for the CFTC holiday party. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's so corrupt, and it's kind of the absolute power corrupts absolutely kind of thing. But the system in its core now is so corrupt. Hey, let me give you one more. You want to know here's a fun one. And I know I'm just waxing about this now, but back in the day when there was a CFTC silver investigation that went on for 5 years and then was just closed real, real quick, right after Andrew McGuire went public with the whistleblowers that he'd been trying to get the CFTC to take seriously and work with Bart Chilton for a whole year. And then finally, Andy goes public because he can't take it anymore. And they hush, hush. I mean, within 24 hours, closed it up and said, oh, there's no manipulation here. Of course, now, that period of 2008 to 2013 is the admitted period, right? With thousands of instances of manipulation in the Department of Justice indictment and settlement, but the CFTC could find nothing. Well, the head of the CFTC enforcement division was a guy by the name of David Meister. Okay. David Meister was his name. And about within 48 hours of them closing the silver investigation, Mr. Meister quit. And this was in 2013, just quit. Okay. And I thought, well, you don't quit. You go off, you know, he probably has a, you know, backup plan. So he surfaces at a law firm called, I think it's called Skadden, Skadden. Okay. So now he's gone from public to private. And now he's in the law firm ostensibly now to work with people that he used to regulate. Well, how's this? Try this one on for size. The head of the JP Morgan's metals desk during the period in question, and also a guy that was on the board of directors of the LBMA, was Michael Nowak, N-O-W-A-K. Anybody can Google Nowak and find out that he's one of the people indicted. He was forced to resign from the LBMA. He's one of the people, because he was the head of the precious metals desk at JP Morgan from 8 to 16 when all this stuff was happening. He's under indictment and being criminally prosecuted, right? Who do you think Nowak's lawyer is? Want to take a stab at that one, Kenneth?
No, I don't know.
David Meister of Skadden. That's neat, isn't it? That's how corrupt.
Incestuous.
Yes. That's just one example of how corrupt it is. And so again, Please don't bore me with the stuff of how, oh yeah, it's all over now. Yeah, the price is going straight up because the banks are out of this business and everything's been fixed, right? No, we've still got a long fight ahead of us.
Yeah, if I had to play poker the way conventional wisdom analyze facts that they're given, I'd lose so much money. I mean, you just can't. How do people not take this information and process it with critical thinking and, you know, make reasonable assumptions about what is likely to happen? And there's so much ignoring the three of a kind that's in front of them, the four of a kind, the straight. But we keep going, we keep losing, you know, and it doesn't seem to mean anything until all of a sudden it does mean something. So
right.
Having said that, Craig, share some closing thoughts here. And of course, if people want to learn more about you, your website, what you do, let them know about tfmetalsreport.com.
Well, thank you, Kenneth. We're coming up on our 10-year anniversary, November the 10th. I'll have been doing this for 10 years, which I'm not sure that's something I should be excited about, because I was in high school when I started this, and look at me now. Look how much I've aged in the last 10 years. The site, I provide analysis every day. And then we have a great community of people from all around the world, where, you know, we all have different political beliefs, but we all understand. I mean, the rubber band is stretching for the global monetary system. And we call it the end of the great Keynesian experiment, right? This debt-based monetary system can only be taken so far before it all collapses on itself. And we're preparing for that, basically. It's $15 a month for my analysis and access to the community, 50 cents a day. I mean, not like it's $100 a month like some of these people charge, but it allows me to keep going, doing what we do. And I think it, even if I just save you some money buying physical metal, it makes it worth it. I think we're on top of this pretty well. I thought we'd get to 1500 last year. We made that almost precisely. I thought we'd get to 1800 and maybe 21 or 22 in silver. And we've well exceeded that. The most important thing, and I keep telling people this, and I mentioned this a couple of times in this call, I try real hard not to distract people with trading and stuff, because I think the being right in the big picture is far more important. You own physical precious metal, and if you want to make some additional fiat, you know, maybe we can pick up some mining shares, you know, along the way. But at this point, you don't want to try to get cute and outsmart yourself. You just got to recognize that what drove prices last year, drove prices again this year, is going to drive prices again next year. And you want to be along for the ride.
There you have it, everyone. Visit Craig Hemke at his website, tfmetalsreport.com. Craig, thank you so much for coming on the show with me once again and doing this update. I think it's really timely. And my goodness, a lot to look forward to. A lot of entertainment, I guess. I mean, if you want to look at it that way, over the next week and the next year, you know. And I think being prepared, we can feel that a little more, feel like it's more entertainment, as consequential as it is.
You got that right, my friend. Hey, it's always great to visit. And let's make sure we visit again soon, because I would imagine things are going to keep changing pretty quickly.
Yes, sir.